Thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J. Dijon, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Full details are at offbeatoregon.com. Check it out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of the long, long bathroom break that resulted in the formation of the Portland Trail Blazers. It's kind of a funky little story, which was first published on November 7th, 2010, under the headline, Portland Trailblazers' Fate Hung on Extra-Long Bathroom Break. Here we go. To serious professional sports fans, Portland is a bit like a cell phone dead zone. Kids in Portland grew up with no local football team to root for, and despite efforts by the state legislature, the town's only baseball franchise has a minor league farm team for an Arizona ball club. Of course, Portland does have the Timbers, professional soccer. That's kind of a big deal. But the other thing that Portland does have, and has for some time, is a major league basketball team, and a pretty good one at that, the Portland Trail Blazers. Had it not been for a really long bathroom break taken in Beverly Hills 40 years ago, though, Portland might today not even have that. Here's the story. In the summer of 1970, a group of Portland investors had put together a proposal for a local NBA team. Perennial Northwest rival Seattle already had one, the Supersonics, established 1967. San Francisco, of course, had had one for some time. Wasn't it finally Portland's turn? The investors thought so, and so, when the NBA's expansion committee met that summer at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in Beverly Hills, Portland promoter Harry Glickman flew in to make the city's case. The NBA's expansion committee consisted of Abe Pollin of the Baltimore Bullets, later the Washington Wizards, also Fred Zollner of the Detroit Pistons, Tommy Cousins of the Atlanta Hawks, and Carl Scheer, a representative of the NBA commissioner Walter Kennedy. Glickman had the plan for the team in hand, but he'd had to leave before the full details of the team's financing could be hashed out. When he left, the plan was to raise funds through an initial public offering of stock, and interim financing was still a big question mark. So when Glickman made the initial presentation, that's what he had to tell the committee. Committee members were a bit dismayed, but they were impressed enough with the Portlanders' plan that they didn't shut Glickman down. Cousins immediately offered to pony up $250,000 if Glickman could find the funds to match it from his Portland people. Glickman promised to find out if that could be done. From Pollin's hotel room, Glickman called home and got a discouraging reply. But just as the promoter was, quote, thinking we were dead, the phone rang again, and suddenly everything had changed. The IPO was a no-go. New Jersey real estate developer Bob Schmertz was on board, and so was a Seattle businessman, Herman Sarkowski. They wanted to finance the franchise privately in partnership with Beverly Hills real estate developer Larry Weinberg, and had $750,000 committed to the cause. Quote,
I went back to the room and said, hey guys, time out, there's a new deal,
Glickman recounted later in his book.
I explained that we were now going to have a privately financed company.
The committee members were no doubt relieved to hear this. Pollin told Glickman to get a letter of credit ready and present the whole thing to a meeting of all the league's owners scheduled for noon the following day. Glickman got on the phone to Sarkowski, who told him he'd have his banker in Tacoma get in touch the next morning. Glickman can't have felt too comfortable with this. Bankers didn't start work until 10 a.m., which would give him very little time to get the documentation he needed. So the next morning at 10 a.m. on the dot, he called the bank. He was referred to a banker named Hugh Darling at the bank's sister institution in Los Angeles.
I called Darling, Glickman said. He had never heard of me, Sarkowski, the NBA, or anything. He called Tacoma and called me back and said yes, he would handle my problem.
So at a few minutes after 10 a.m., Glickman was on his way to downtown L.A. to pick up the letter. Well, he got lost on the way. By the time Glickman got to the office, it was already 11:15, and it was a half-hour drive back to the hotel, even if he didn't get lost again. He raced into the bank and found Darling yelling into the telephone, having a heated discussion with someone.
He waved to a chair where I sat biting my nails for about 10 minutes, Glickman recalled. When he finished, he started asking me questions about Portland and the NBA.
Without being too offensive, Glickman managed to redirect Darling's attention back to the letter, which was just on the verge of being too late. Darling dictated the letter to his secretary, who brought it over for him to sign. Alas, there was a typo on it. He told her to take it away and retype it.
I said don't bother with that. Just initial it and give me the damn letter,
Glickman said.
Which he did.
Racing to the parking lot, Glickman leaped into his car and started running every red light he saw between downtown L.A. and the Beverly Wilshire. When he got there, it was 12.05 p.m., and he found Paulin, the Baltimore Bullets owner, in the bathroom. Paulin, quote,
told me he had been very worried about my lateness, and so he had asked for a recess while he went to the John,
Glickman said.
He remained there until I arrived with my letter.
Well, the NBA representatives took the information and told Glickman to come back at 3 p.m. When he did, he was told that congratulations, Portland was now an NBA city. Well, that's it for today's episode, and if you're listening for the first time and want more information about Offbeat Oregon, you can get everything at our central website at offbeatoregon.com. There's about 175 columns going back to 2008 when I first started doing these, plus links out to the audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes for your smartphone, and to the Facebook page and Twitter feed if you'd like to join the conversation online. There's even a link to the Amazon page for my book, Wicked Portland, the Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, which came out this month. For more on the book, wicked-portland.com will take you right there. The website is also where you'll find full citations to sources for this story, which include Harry Glickman and Matt Love. All these columns are covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Details are at offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is a track titled Old Man's Waltz by the Atlas String Band, written by Carmen Ficarra. Coming to Corvallis? Drop me a line. Let's grab a cup of coffee. I love geeking out with fellow history buffs. I'm at Finn at offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, at offbeatoregon. That is it for today, so thanks for listening, and have a great day.